It's been my recent privilege to be introduced to an amazing character and chat to him about his service during the Second World War with the Royal Marines. Dennis Donovan is now in his 90s, but after a recent pilgrimage to Normandy, he agreed to chat to me for my Royal Marines History podcast. Dennis landed on Juno Beach on 6th of June 1944 as a member of 4-8 Royal Marine Commando, the last of the commando units raised during World War II, of which unit he is now the last surviving member. Before joining 4-8, Dennis trained at Dulwich Infantry Training Camp in Devon, which although long gone, the remnants of the rifle butts and some of the structures still echo to the shouts of instructors training Royal Marine recruits on Limpson Common every day. After initial training, Dennis was soon posted to the 7th Battalion Royal Marines, who were already in Sicily after taking part in Operation Husky. This unit, which would later form the nucleus of the new commando. As an introduction to this unique and credible podcast, I thought I'd provide you with context of the units with which Dennis served during this time and some of the background information of what was happening. 7th Battalion Royal Marines have been in existence since 1940 as part of the Royal Marine Division. The Royal Marines Division has struggled to identify itself in the early days of the war. Initially held in the UK for home defence after Dunkirk, it was still fully equipped, unlike the British Expeditionary Force, which had left most of its hardware in France. The commando idea had been formed within days of Operation Dynamo's conclusion, but due to resistance from the Navy in particular, but including some senior Royal Marines, the obvious choice for a light, highly trained amphibious strike force that could operate closely with the Navy would not come to fruition until 1942. And so before this, the role had been taken up in whole by the Army. Due to much jostling by Admiral Roger Keyes, the Chief of Combined Operations, and his successor, then Commodore Louis Mountbatten, the 1st Royal Marine Commando was formed in February 1942. 6,000 Royals volunteered to be part of what was to become A Commando, who would first draw blood on the beaches of Dieppe. Here, of 370 officers and men, 76 were lost. A Commando would later become 40 Commando Royal Marines. At this time, 7th Battalion, still a part of the RM Division, deployed to South Africa in September 1942 to guard naval stores dumps. When this task was closed, they transited to Suez and began helping to run the Combined Training Centre in Cabrit. They were then ordered to develop and form the 31st Beach Brick, the first of its kind, which consisted of over 2,700 personnel from all arms, to manage the landing of supplies and reinforcements after an assault. The Marines of the Beach Brick landed in Sicily on the 10th of July 1943 in the opening phases of Operation Husky. Here they landed just after the assaulting force and dealt with snipers and mopped up enemy units that had been left behind. After 7 days on the beachhead, the battalion was retasked with occupation duties, which only lasted a few days before taking up a new task in protecting 30 Corps headquarters. They were then called forward under the very short notice to support 51st Infantry Regiment. Now unexpectedly in an infantry role, they yonked forward, conducting 75-mile compass march and had to conduct a crossing of the River Detanio to outflank the enemy and try to relieve the pressure on 51st. Dennis joined the unit after this action. Here the battalion was involved in the occupation of Catania and Tirano in Italy before they were sent back to the UK in November 1943. It was during the planning for Normandy that Montgomery had said he needed to widen the assault, and instead of 3 divisions, there should be 5. The commando's mission for D-Day, being light shock troops, was to guard the flanks of the amphibious landing force, move inland quickly to take key objectives, and to link up and reinforce or relieve airborne landing forces. To achieve this within the plan, it was realised that 21st Army Group was one commando unit short. So in March 1944, Colonel Moulton was tasked with forming 4-8 Royal Marine Commando, and given a free rein to make his own selection of men and officers, most of which came from 7th Battalion and Royal Marines of Mobile Naval Defence Organisation 2, which had returned in February that year after serving with the 8th Army throughout the Middle East, Malta and Sicily, mostly in air defence or coastal artillery role with very little infantry training. He tried to fill the ranks with volunteers, however not everyone already in the 2 units was suitable for commando training, and so many more were drafted in. Shortly after forming up in Deal, Kent, on the south coast of England, they moved north to Scotland to conduct an 18-day condensed commando training course at Achnacarry, where most earned their green berets. The unit was now moved to Gravesend in Kent, where they put into local lodgings, which was how commandos were billeted and formed up into a unit. HQ, SIG section, admin section, and 5 fighting troops of 3 officers and 65 ranks, A, B, X, Y, and Z, named after the turrets of capital ships, supported by S Troop, a heavy weapons troop. After some more amphibious training, they moved through a transit camp in Southampton and boarded 6 wooden LCIS, landing craft infantry small, for the Normandy invasion. On D-Day, 4-8 Commando approached Juno Beach in line abreast, behind the Canadian North Shore Regiment, who had landed at Nan Red, Sector 7, at 0805. The fighting had been hard, and when 4-8 began to approach what should have been a cleared beach for them to leapfrog through, there were still pillboxes and a strong point intact, covering the approaches and beach with machine gun fire, with mortars and artillery in depth. Beach obstacles, which were still covered by the surf and incoming tide, caused havoc amongst the wave, the lead craft being swept broadside onto the beach, and the LCIs carrying Y and Z troop struck by underwater obstacles. They became lodged 150 and 50 yards respectively from the beach, not only in fairly deep and turbulent water with a strong undertow, but close to the guns of the strong point WN-27 in Aubonne-sur-Mer. With craft starting to take on water, men began to disembark. Many men were swept away or drowned, trying to cross the water gap from the ramps to the beach. Seeing they were in trouble and under fire, a passing LCT managed to get close enough to transfer men of Y troop over its stern and ashore, crammed between its load of Shermans. And a single LCA ferried those left on Z troop's LSI ashore. Those who survived crossing the beach huddled into cover, mostly below a seawall, pinned down by intense direct fire and continuous indirect fire, they were in some disarray. As Sherman tanks began to land and advance from the Fort Garry Horse, it was the CO, Colonel Moulton, who, seeing a beach exit open, stood up with bullets zipping over his head and said, 4-8, Royal Marine Commando, this way. After suffering around 25% casualties on the landing, so started a journey that would see them fight all the way until the end of the war, in almost continuous contact with the enemy through France and Holland, including the Battle of the Scheldt, Operation Infatuate, the landings at Walcheren, the fighting on the Maas in the wetlands, rivers and islands of the Bischbosch. After the surrender, they were sent on occupation duties to Germany. Returning to the UK at the end of 1945, the commando would be disbanded in January 1946. If you'd like more information on these units, please do look at my website and DITS page. You can search for units individual or use the map to find out more. Now grab a beer or GNT, sit back, imagine you're in the pub with us, the fire crackling, and listen to Dennis tell us his DITS.
Hello.
Hello, hello, Simon.
Yes, hi. Hi, Ruth, hi. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you? I'm sitting here with Dad, he's next to me.
Dennis, very pleased to speak to you, Dennis.
Right, very nice to speak to you.
Wonderful that you're going to give me this opportunity. I think it's fantastic. So I can't thank you enough. Dennis, my thoughts are, well, the bits that are missing always is everyone just thinks you got on a boat, you landed on always an LCA, obviously, or LCVP, they always call them, but of course they weren't, at D-Day. And then you did something on the beach, and then that was it. And maybe you went to Walcheren, and maybe you did a bit in Germany. I want to fill in some of those gaps because there's some really interesting stuff. Like, you know, when you guys, right back to Sicily, but really interesting stuff about Normandy, about, you know, being on board, getting your orders on board, the LCIs, the ramps failing, you know, all those little things that you'd be able to talk about and tell as someone that was on the ground. That's what I'd like to do.
Yes, I don't mind. Well, that's what
fantastic. Everyone wants to hear your voice and your story. What I'd like to do is just lead you down that path. And those personal experiences, it's the Royal Marine mindset, it's the commandos, you know, that's what, and so that's what it's really all about. Training at Dulwich, because people are interested in that, because that's all gone, you know?
Yeah, Dulwich is, yes, but the other one is still there, isn't it?
No, have you been back to Livingston at all? Have you been down there?
No, I've not been down there, but when we first went there, it was like leaving home.
Yeah,
sheets on the beds, sheets on the bed and everything. And because you only did 6 weeks there. And then you went on to Dulwich, where we would await him.
Yeah, I like that. amazing. And how long did you spend at Dulwich?
Well, I got called into the Marines in January 43.
Yeah.
And I did the 6 weeks of where the Marines are now, anyway. And we did our 6 weeks training there.
Yeah.
Learning the fire a gun. And,
yeah.
And all
all the basics.
All the basics. And then we went into...
What was Dulwich tented then, or was it Nissen Hut?
It was Nissen Hut and tents.
Yeah.
There was a... Cold water, no hot water, cold water.
No.
Anyway, you got used to it. And take the notice.
But, yeah.
Then after that, I got put in the holding battalion, and I was sent to back to Dordage and waited there, and then I got called into them as a reserve casualty replacement for I went from there to Deal. I waited there. Well, interesting thing when I was at Deal, my brother was sent there as well on the embarkation. He got sent to Deal. He got sent to MMBDO1.
Yeah, so he was MBDO1.
Yeah, MMBDO1. And I got sent back to 210th Battalion. And we were in Sicily. Did nothing in Sicily. No, I didn't. I had a replacement. But then we hung about a bit and went to Italy.
Yeah.
And then I came back to Italy and they sent us up to Scotland. We landed at Paisley. And then
that was then to join 4-8 and do your commando training.
That's it, yeah. We got sent, yeah. We split and sorted out between MMPDO2 and the 7th Battalion.
The 7th Battalion on Sicily, they had done quite a big yomp, hadn't they? A big 75-mile yomp from the beach to get into action, because they weren't expecting to be called forward, but they did go into action. It must have been before you joined. So do you remember?
At the time afterwards, it was a bit of a letdown, nobody sort of explained anything to us and left us. We did one exciting thing. They made us climb Mount Etna. Yes,
that's not all right.
And the whole of the island knew about it. All the troops were left on the island, laughing at themselves. Marines climbing Mount Etna. I like an idiot. I got within about 30 yards from the top.
That's incredible.
I was walking up with a sergeant, and I said to him, "I don't think any bother to go any farther, do you?" And he said, "No, I don't think so." I said, "No, I'm going down." Oh, I went back down.
Well, I got down. Really?
They were booking you in at the top.
Yeah. So
I had to go again next day. That was a brilliant
idea. Oh, fantastic. right. So you left Sicily. You said you did some, I think you did some guarding POWs and things, I guess.
And we went to Italy. And then it was from Italy. Well, guarding prisoners and cleaning up some pits and that. Nothing exciting.
No.
Where was that?
And then did they fly you back then to Paisley? Or did you sail back?
The figs.
Well, do you know, that's one thing I was thinking of today. And I can't think of where we didn't fly back, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I don't know. Whether we came by a lorry or any, I have no idea.
In Sicily, Dad, or was it in Italy where you he'd not seen figs before and he saw all these figs and he picked out on the figs. And of course, guess what? He got disappointed.
No way. I'm sure you weren't the only one.
That was in Sicily. Went in dock for 23 hours. No mind. One thing about that, the British military hospitals were terrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not about their gear or anything, but their attitude. You know, like, as I say, I had dysentery. And first morning, it's someone come running in, standing patient, stand to attention, sitting patient, sit to lay to attention. I've never heard such a load of nonsense in my life.
Rubbish, yeah.
But the second night, the second morning, I ran past the CEO. When I came back, they were waiting for me. Where have you been? I said, well, where do you normally go? Was the thing I had. And that was that. Yeah. they kept their eyes on me.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure you weren't the only one.
No.
And then you were in a Canadian hospital, weren't you? Canadian Field Hospital. Well, that was after. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But then I came back and we formed a commando.
Yeah.
I must say here and now that that colonel was brilliant, Lieutenant Colonel Morton.
Yeah.
During the landings, he was following me men and we followed him. And he helped to get us off that beach.
Anyway. I guess that sort of started because he handpicked pretty much the unit, didn't he? 4A, yeah. It was up to him.
Yes.
And
he came as a stranger to us, everyone.
Was really? Yeah.
Anyway, they came back and we went back to the carry. Yeah. Was. I had thoroughly enjoyed it. I might be an idiot. I don't know.
Did you?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I came away and felt as though I could push a house over.
Really? That's incredible, yeah.
Going into the trees and idiot. that was being up there in February.
In cold, yeah.
Living under canvas. And it was cold water washing in the streams. But, and that was another thing. They decided to take for a walk up Mount Everett, up Ben Nevis. We went to Ben Nevis and they decided we would go up for a walk.
Right.
Only a walk.
Yeah.
We started on it. Oh, and then before we went out, they gave us a chop each to put in our pack. And we walked up, they got part of the way up, and they called for break for a meal. We had to cook our own meal. There was no way to cook it. There was no hot water, there was only snow.
Yeah.
And I've never seen so many royal chops eaten in my life. As that was.
And, really?
But the next time it came, we was all scrounging around, picking up bits of debris and putting them in our pooches ready for make the fire.
Yeah.
The second time. And you get caught.
Exactly. That's how you learn, isn't it? You know, it's... And I'd read that before, that you just took your rations raw and then had to send for yourself. But it's a good way to learn. If you can do it that way, you can do it every other way, can't you?
I was a bit of an idiot. I liked it. I enjoyed myself. I liked it at the gallery. And we came down and we finished up going into Gravesend. It put us into civvy billets. And I was billeted with a young lady, a daughter. I'm not kidding you, I could have done anything. I could have.
Yeah.
I came back from one day when we'd been out. My feet were bleeding. And she nursed my feet and cried.
Really?
Yeah.
How lovely, yeah.
We had a good time there. And when we left there, that's another interesting thing. When we left, we were going to D-Day. And we were told, you will not wear steel helmets. If you steel helmets up, we are wearing berries. The Germans will be frightened when they see the green berries coming down.
Hey, that's interesting, yeah. No, I don't think I've ever heard that before. I obviously knew that everyone had been there, steel helmets, but I hadn't understood that before. So, yeah, it was really to put the fear up the Germans that the commandos were coming.
Coming, no helmets, no.
Yeah.
No helmets.
But what do you know why Gravesend? I guess you were training down there with the LCIs, were you?
It was your first place where I was taken. We did proper landings.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Not in Gravesend itself.
Deal?
No.
No. Dover?
No. I can't think of it.
The boats were kept alongside, I guess, in Gravesend, and then you went out and did training along the coast.
Yeah, and as you landed, you got blown to pieces. They had things that blew your feet up. Not very hard, but threw you off.
No. Balance. Yeah, sure.
And all firing was on fixed lines.
Yeah. LMGs and that. Go on.
We did some training there with the army, there with the Americans. They didn't like
okay.
it.
They didn't like the live firing.
Didn't like being blown. We had them out of had them put them up at 4 feet as a boat, put them up at 4 feet and put them up there. Because when they were coming, started firing on fixed lines across the bows. So that was a bit of a scream, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They didn't like that.
No. Oh, God. That's incredible. So you did a lot of training there then, up and down that coast. And then when did you find out you were moving?
We didn't really until one morning.
Right.
And they sent us back to get packed up. We were told that you had to tell the landladies that you were going on a special course. It wasn't D-Day. They tried to.
Hmm.
They must have thought people were silly, I think. It's all marched out with the guns at the slope and everything. When we were going for the landing, we went to Southampton.
Yes.
Oh, that was another funny thing. We were guarded by the Americans, stopped us escaping out of camp.
Well, people don't realise that they were actually American camps because they were going to use them later as logistics camps, weren't they? So that's what
we were in them. But it's the same.
The camps were quite well set up, weren't they?
It was set up all right, yes. But we never met much. We weren't told much about what we were going to do.
Yeah.
That is what I find wrong now. We're putting in these little boats.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Just made them up as if we go along, I think, out of Meccano sets.
Yeah.
Terrible. Practically every man was seasick. It was just a terrible trip.
Yeah.
That's another thing that I kind of understand. I mean, there's supposed to be brilliant people who work these things out. But they have runways down each port and starboard side of the ship.
Yeah.
Now, if you go on those runways, you're going to be seen, aren't you?
You're a target, yeah.
You had a full pack, a 3-inch water bomb on your top of that you were carrying. Yeah. And as you come up on view, you've got no more chance, really.
No.
And So I'd done no more than when I saw what was going on, I jumped off the top. Jumped off
Did
the
you?
Side.
Yeah, right.
Alongside a dead Canadian, unfortunately.
Oh, right.
But
what? Which troop were you in?
B troop.
B troop.
Captain.
And
Perry.
Did you?
There's another man. Yeah. Captain Perry.
Captain Perry. Did your LCI make it all the way to the beach, or were you stranded?
Two of us made it all the way. We lost two anyway. But that's an age. I think age group was the other one.
Okay. Yeah, on the other boat.
Yeah. But poor fellas.
Yeah. When did you know? Because obviously, when you were getting briefed in Southampton, you weren't told the actual location, but you saw models and maps. Did you know it was Normandy?
No, we didn't know it was Normandy, but they showed you the landing ground.
Do you think people knew it was Normandy? They worked it out, or still didn't know when they got on the boat?
No, we didn't know.
Didn't know.
Didn't know. No.
And then you got briefed when you're on the LCI and you're at sea, and that's when you got told.
When we got told that was it. This was the off.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you go on deck at all as you left harbour in Southampton, or were you down below?
Down below. It's all down below.
Yeah. So you didn't see the sort of armada or anything until you're on the beach.
You try to get up top because you've been sick. A lot being sick. I was lucky there. I wasn't, but...
It must have been horrible rolling about, you know, the smell of diesel and then other people being sick. and the fear and on top of that as well. The unknown on top of that as well must have been pretty exhausting.
And there was the seamen there. They were holding the ramps down. Bouncing about in the waves.
Okay. Oh, so that's what they did, because I know the one of the problems was the ramps did float, didn't they, at the front? So is that what they did? The crewmen went down and held it down for you?
Yeah.
When you jumped off the side, how deep was the water? Up to your chest, I suppose.
I wasn't from the first landing sort of business. No.
No.
The vessel pulled in. And they started discharging, and that's when I saw it, and I thought, no, I'm not waiting. I'm going over the side.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. It was only about 4 foot.
And then you went up the beach.
Yeah. Move away
through the water.
It was wasn't a very pleasant thing.
No, I'm sure.
Oh, very
I'm
nice. Sure.
No.
Things stick in your mind. I know. I remember. Our padre was running up and down the beach, pulling people off the beach.
Yeah.
And he got badly wounded in the finish.
Oh, did he?
Sick Bay Tibby was the same. The sick Bay Tibby was the same. A pair of them.
Yeah, really.
They're marvellous. All you want to do is get off the beach. Well, I mean, that was our job, but...
Yeah.
See what happened to the. Never mind. It was machine guns. So we, as I say, we had a good colonel, and I had a good troop commander, Captain Perry.
Yeah.
So we got off the beach. I don't know how we did it, but we did.
Yeah. It's incredible, and I'm sure, you know, it was a lot of that was that sort of, you know, the training and you know, being such a tight knit group of men and having good leadership, you know, obviously got everyone over. Made it through. Yeah. Do you remember that being a thing? Do you remember that was sort of the drive, of people being pushed on? And
yeah, it was. He, as I say, come follow me, men, and. You went, you didn't question it or nothing. You went.
Good. Yeah, that's good. And did you drive straight up the beach and over the top and into hinterland, or were you fighting as you went, or were you just getting off the beach and getting clear?
Getting off the beach and getting ready to do what you had to do.
Yeah, sure. And then you were then, I mean, the mission was then to get inshore, wasn't it?
So yeah, it was to get inshore and to get the land grown.
The Canadian flank, wasn't it?
Yes, but yeah, I felt sorry for them, though. Yeah.
Really?
They had a really hard time. They were told the same as us, that it was only cripples and everything else defending the bit of a sand beach.
Yeah.
And that was entirely different.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And then you mustered as a unit then in the hinterland beyond the beach, ready for then the move to...
Went on to Langroon.
Yeah.
And there we lost Captain Perry. We lost all their officers.
We lost
all of our troop. And we finished up with one sergeant.
Really? That's incredible.
And that was just us. I mean,
yeah,
the other groups were bad, just as bad. It wasn't a picnic. No way.
No, definitely not. And that was the village. So you were going through the village, and then I think there was a high ground behind as well that caused the problem.
We went on from Langroon. At Dover's, they had a radar station.
It was a
terrific thing. It's left there now. It's on show there. You can see it. And they sent us in to take it, and we never had enough men to do anything.
Because of the losses.
Yeah, there were the losses we had, and we couldn't do it.
Right.
I think the Canadians took it eventually. Not very interested anymore.
No, you're very... Honestly, Dennis, it's very, very, very interesting. Because you can read about these things all day, you know, but actually you were there and your memories, you know, it's really interesting. It's going to be very interesting for people, I promise.
Be quite honest with you, when I came home, I shut it all out of my mind.
Yeah.
Didn't want to know.
No.
My wife and I, we never spoke about the war. And the girls will tell you, Ruth will tell you. We never discussed much about the war. It's only going back there since, what, 30?
No, it was the first came up about Dad being in the war was when my son Nathan, you know, 7 or 8, and he's saying, Granddad, you know, where your medals?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Dad said, well, I haven't got any medals. I said, what do you mean you haven't got your medals? Well, when the war finished, I never applied for them because you had to apply for them. He said, I never applied for them. And he didn't have his uniform or anything because I think his mum burnt it all because of lice and God knows what else. He didn't have a uniform, did you, Dad, either? No, he didn't have his berry or anything. No, and so because Nathan had asked, Mum, she persuaded Dad, come on, right up, and then you went to collect them, didn't you? You went up to the Strand or somewhere, Charing Cross, and he collected his medals. He got 4. We never ever went to Normandy. Dad always used to watch, you know, Remembrance November and things like that. But we never, never ever came to Normandy. Never talked about Normandy. And then 2014 or 2015, I can't remember. It was something like that. And so I took Dad up on the train. We went up, didn't we, to Paris and then out to Caen. But we went to the ceremony. That was our first visit to the ceremonies. And Dad was really moved by it. And I remember we went to Saint-Aubin and we went to the tourist office to get some tourist information and just sort of like stand there, Dad just standing there looking out, you know, remembering. Because there was the information about all the different ceremonies, and by chance we bumped into two chaps. I don't know if you know them at all. One was Ken, what was his surname? Ken And sadly, he passed away at the end of last year. He had been a Royal Marine Commando, and he'd done the Falklands War.
Okay. No, I'm not sure who that is, but yes, someone will know.
Yeah, and one of the sons of a 48th Royal Marine Commando, Tony, he's bigger with the 48 Association, which has now been dissolved. But and we met them and said, oh, yes, you know, the ceremonies. And so they said, oh, look, we're going to be here today at Douve la Delivron. And then after that, we're going to be at Saint-Aubin and Langrune. So that's the first time we did all the ceremonies.
And no way, really?
That brilliant. Since 2016, we've been, well, because of COVID, no, but we've been ever since. And we make we've got family and friends, and everybody goes basically. And
we always go to Saint-Aubin.
Yeah, we always go to the most important ceremonies for Dad are the Saint-Aubin. In fact, the area of the beach where they landed is called Nan Red. That was the code name, Red, which is just outside, just between basically Saint-Aubin and Bernier-sur-Mer. And they hold an actual ceremony on the beach itself, a religious ceremony, the vicar and everything. It's very moving. And it's like at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then and then Langrune hold a ceremony the same day on the 6th, but later on in the evening around the 6 o'clock. They've got the monument. I don't know if you've been and you've seen, but they've got dedicated monuments to the 48 Royal Marine Commandos. Mm. And Saint-Aubin's also to the Canadians as well. But it's become like a little trip now for us every year. We're going up there, and
but the local people are brilliant.
Yeah, I'm sure. They still remember and look after you so well, don't they?
Well, in France, in schools they're taught the duty to remember. It's a special thing in the history and civic classes that they do here.
Yeah,
everyone, they have a duty to remember, and in Normandy, of course, it's D-Day, the main event. Where and the children are amazing, aren't they, Dad? They come up and they do special things, and they want to, you know, meet Dad or have their photo with him, and you know, so
they come up and shake your hand and say you're a film star.
It's very nice. Yeah.
And the mayor of Langrune, he's the same mayor.
He's been re-elected. They had elections last year, but he was re-elected again. So he's almost like a friend now.
That's nice.
And from Saint-Aubin.
Oh, he's the one that I sent you the photo of with Dad. Why he's
here?
Langrune.
And Langrune. Okay. That's very nice. Yeah, they're very welcoming, aren't they? And it's nice that they remember.
But this year was quite special because Saint-Aubin have a new mayor, and because the international ceremony this year was held in Bernier-sur-Mer to do with logistics and timing, Saint-Aubin actually held, instead of holding the religious service on the beach at Nan Red, they actually held it at the centre of the main beach in Saint-Aubin. And then the ceremony was a lovely, it was one of the best ceremonies that we'd had for on the beach there. But after, they had all these like Second World War jeeps lined up, and the mayor said, and now for those who are going on to Langrune-sur-Mer ceremony, can go by jeep. So they four men lifted Dad up and got him into a jeep. And so, the last time he walked from Saint-Aubin to Langrune, but this time he went by jeep along the sand.
That's great, lovely, great. Yeah, it's nice that you've found it now, you know, and
but it's funny because different things along the way of different ceremonies, because we do, like Dad said, the special ones are Saint-Aubin and Langrune, but we also go to Salonelles on the 7th. Dad was for about 2 to 3 months in a trench.
We'll come back to that, because I'd like to talk about Langrune and the centaurs, and then your move to Pegasus and all that. Yeah, for sure.
Because then, look, a couple of years ago when we went, before COVID, we bumped into a lady who'd had from Salonelles, who'd been 18 at the time of the war, and had been there when Dad was there, and stuff like, you know, through my daughter, I mean, I can speak French, but, you know, my daughter speaks with her accent and she's completely bilingual. And so she was the translator for Dad and the lady. And it was really nice. And then this Dad always said, yeah, they have a reception and they make a big fuss of Dad there. And this year we went and we found that her husband was waiting for us to let us know, unfortunately, he was waiting for us in the cafe because he knows that on the 7th, we always go to the cafe before the ceremony. And he was waiting for us to tell us, unfortunately, his wife had passed away. But he wanted Lucy and I, which is my daughter, to go to his house because then in his house, he showed us he had photographs up of Dad and Janine on display. But he pointed out that the house next door was the barber because Dad always used to say, I had my hair cut by a girl here in Salonelles. And he kept saying, it's along here somewhere, but we never found where it was. And he said, oh, the barber, yeah, and it was next door. So now we know where the barber shop was.
No way, that's funny.
Things like that you find out. So,
yeah. You know, when you go back to coming off the beach and you go into Langoon before, because Captain Perry was killed by a sniper, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, in our house. He was alongside me, actually.
Was he?
We came up to a hedgerow. And
right.
He wanted to see over the hedgerow to see what was on down farther.
Yeah.
And he got shot in the head. I don't think it would have saved him. I don't know. But what the Germans had done was all the houses along the beach, they had a cellar.
Right.
They knocked them all into one to make it so they can travel from one into the other without coming up on top.
Yes. They
had the machine guns as well. It took 80, well, it took, we didn't do it the first day. We didn't do it D-Day, we took it the second day.
Because you were basically fighting strong point to strong point to strong point that they'd made up, yeah.
Yeah.
And
so he got shot in the head. Whether the helmet would have saved him or not, I don't know. I'm not going to say.
Yeah, probably not.
Wouldn't have done that.
No, he was basically looking across the, you know, this crossroads towards the next sort of objective, I guess.
Yeah.
Did you? And you were getting fire support from a landing craft gun, I think, as well from the beach, weren't you?
Yeah, there's a bit of a story about that. We were,
oh, really?
They were shelling. I think it was Belfast or was it the Nelly? I don't know. Anyway, they were still shelling in front of us. And then they finished re-cracking up the shelling. And they hadn't done anything. And the officer turned around and said, tell them to up their sights. Yeah, they're hitting us.
Yeah, no way.
Back came the answer. Treat it as a joke.
Treat it as a joke.
The same as... The Americans, you know, when they're landing their tanks, had those special tanks that could float in the water or something.
Yeah, duplex drive, yeah.
And I'm afraid the skippers of the ships never took them in close enough. Every one of them. Happened.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But you had, I think you probably had the Centaurs from the Royal Marine Armoured Support Group at some point as well. Did you see those guys?
Yes, on the second, day.
Right.
Came up when we were having problems at Langroon.
Yeah.
We had one big strong point there was causing a hell of a mess. The same
there, really?
Underground. But one of the tanks went in and he made a bloomer or something, but he fell. And then he blocked the way for the other tank to come in.
Yeah, I think he got his track blown out or something.
Yeah.
You got through that then and cleared Laguna. Well, it was the next day, wasn't it, that you were waiting?
Yeah. And then I got to Salmonell's. And Salmonell's was on the flank of the airborne.
Right, yeah.
So we took over the wing of the airborne. It's at the short sea side of the coastal road. And we was on that. We stuck there for a few days.
Yeah, so this is where they'd taken, the end of that was where they'd taken Pegasus Bridge.
Yeah. We stuck there for quite a while.
And you linked up, did you link up with them there, or was it just that they were one side and you were the other?
They were one side, we were the other. As far as I know, we got stuck on the outside. And we used to do patrols out of Salmonell's.
Right.
To get Germans to find out what troops they were.
And then you basically were staying in that location for some time, weren't you? You were dug in then?
Yeah, we dug in. I don't know if you ever lived in the slip trench, have you?
Yeah, not as long as you have, though, and not under the same circumstances, for sure. not pleasant. Yeah, they were. So you were basically doing patrols out then from those trenches, from that defensive position.
Yeah, but that was we used to do patrols out, all types of patrols, listeners, recce, fighting patrol,
anything.
Yeah, used to keep us going, let alone keep the Germans going.
What do you remember about those patrols? I guess you were rotating them through, and then you'd get a briefing, would you, of what you were going to do, and then you'd go out and do a patrol?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you was called out. I mean, it's like the Padre. The Padre used to come and say a prayer for the patrol. I was on a fighting patrol once, and they had me out as chief scout. And I was going along and I come to the farmhouse, as we called it. It was a house. It was a beautiful house, it was.
Yeah.
I come to this house. And so he said to me, number one scout, go forward and check it over.
Yeah.
And I went. And I thought, so what's that noise? I could hear a noise. And the rainwater. And the dog. I thought, so I called out the number two scout, said, there's trouble up there, it's in their house, it's trouble for us. They went back and told the CO, said, Sergeant Stringer, Sergeant Stringer, go with him. He came with us, and when we got up there, it turned out to be a false alarm. Rainwater was dripping through the roofs, and that was a ticking clock.
Yeah, right.
The dog causing problems. And, oh, he said, thank God for that.
Yeah, thank God for that. Yeah, just didn't know. Yeah, those senses. Yeah. And what? How big was the sort of fighting patrol when you were going out on fighting patrols?
12.
12, yeah, okay. Yeah. So two scouts and.
You go on and listen, patrol behind here, two or three of you.
Yeah.
Things like that.
And a recce patrol? What was that, sort of three or four?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was the interaction at that time then on those patrols with the Germans? Was there much interaction, or were they just sort of staying low?
They were staying low most of the time. They only got a few mortars. The 88s. As I say, living in the ground, you made it look like a mansion when you come.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Dug it all out. Be surprised how good it was.
Well, there's a strange feeling, isn't there, when you, even if it's a hole in the ground, there's a strange feeling when you have to leave it of, you know, it was home and it was comfortable.
Been there for a while, and then you got out.
I guess it was all to do with, you know, trying to get into Caen, wasn't it? It was all the preparation for Caen.
Yeah.
And I think the commandos sort of mission at that point was just to hold that flank, wasn't it? So the Americans could move around. And
I don't know what the trouble was, but they were a long time coming up. We went to. I seem to remember getting to Rouen. Why we were doing Rouen, I don't know, but. We finished up in the gap.
Falaise Gap.
Yeah. And we were told during the day you couldn't move during the day, you were so close to the Germans. But the Canadians didn't seem to understand
that. Oh, really?
You'd be creeping around. At night time, everything was done overnight.
Yeah.
But they didn't seem to care. I don't know what was wrong with
them. Oh, really? And did they suffer for that? Did they get mortared and artillery, I suppose?
Yeah, all kinds of stuff used to come down there.
Yeah. And you were just holding ground, I suppose, and just holding that area then?
Holding that area, police kept.
And were you there when they broke through? Were you there when they did the march?
Yeah, when they broke out. And then we went to Holland, Belgium.
Yeah.
Belgium first.
You went, you went, it was then preparation for Walcheren, I guess, for infantry.
Yeah, because that is just another thing, you see. We were told we were only going to go for 4 days on the landing.
Sure.
4 days went on and on and on, and it didn't stop, did it?
No.
So it was going 4 days. We just sort of hold the wall till it finished.
And then, so you moved up the coast, and that was by vehicle?
No, Shanks's.
It is what?
Shanks's ponies. Feet.
Oh, on your feet? Oh, right. Yes. Walked.
Sorry. That had a bit of a
What do you call it? Shanks's pony?
Shanks's ponies.
Sorry, I'll look that up. No, that's all right. It's a good one. Okay, so so where did you go to? Do you remember? You were then billeted, weren't you, to do training?
We was at in Holland, sand dunes.
Oh, here we go. Are you September? I got after relief by 7th Battalion Black Watch. The commando moved to Vendune, 27th of September, to start practicing for infatuate. Oh, concentrating Dehaene?
Dehaene, that's it. Dehaene.
Yeah, that's October. So you were training first on the sand.
Yes. They decided they wanted telecommunications better improved.
Right.
And they selected about 12 of us. We got sent back to Wales, actually.
Okay.
To a course of photography.
Signals course
in Wales. We were there. I had no, to be perfectly honest with you, I had no intentions of becoming a signaller.
No, no one does.
No, because they weren't too much on spot. But yeah. I had no intention of becoming, and I don't think hardly any of us was there when on this course.
Yeah.
And when we got back, we found that we'd missed salt Walcheren, and unfortunately, a lot of the chaps I knew weren't there.
Sure, of course.
They took a bigger belt in. Or as big a belt in as they took D-Day.
Yeah.
And it's not fair because it's not mentioned much.
No.
They really went for it. I mean,
with 4-7 as well.
Yeah. 4-7. And I think it's another one as well. I'm not sure. But 47 and 40, 48 were two.
Yeah, 4-1. 4-1 were there as well. 4-1. 4-1 landed. 4-1. As well. Yeah. So obviously when you rejoined, then there was a lot of guys missing, a lot of holes.
Yeah, whenever we joined them.
How long after was it that you rejoined them? That you joined, because that was November that they landed at Walsham.
When I got back, they were in Goose, a place called Goose, G-O-E-S, and they were, believe it or not, we were billeted with civilians there again. They really had a base and full. One day I was billeted on, it was a schoolmaster.
Right.
With four children. And you know what their meal was? Apple and potato. Apple and potato. That was their meal. That's what they lived on. That's all they had to eat. We had a lad, one of them, Johnny North, he got the picked language up like nobody's business.
I found out it's Ghost. It's on the west coast of the island.
Yeah.
So then from there then, after, I guess, sort of battle casualty replacements and sorting the unit out, then you move east into Holland proper.
It went up through Breda and finished up on the dikes.
That must have been difficult as well. I mean, that's a difficult, the polders and dikes, and it's a difficult area to operate, isn't it? All around the Beech Bosch and that area.
That's what I laugh at when they say to me, "Halt, who goes there, friend or foe?" Because we're lining up on the dikes waiting for the Germans to come over, or they were waiting for you to come.
Yes.
You saw Germans, if you saw a patrol coming towards you, I mean, we had an officer, he said, "Wait till you see the whites of their eyes." And then he called out, "Halt, who goes there?" Now I asked you, what's the German going to say?
Yeah. Friend? Yeah, exactly.
And they teach you that, don't they? They teach you.
Friend or foe, You were Breda, and then you moved up into the sort of, the polders and the dikes and that. I'm just wondering, I mean, that must have been wet and cold, and I mean, it was an awful winter anyway, wasn't it?
It wasn't pleasant,
And so the Germans were very close by. It was like being in the sort of, like hedgerows back in Normandy, that you were right on top of each other, yeah?
It's under the river that separates you.
Yeah. And they had a lot of islands as well. I think, were you clearing the islands and that as well?
Yeah, the islands, that's right, yeah. You go on and on.
And so at this time, you were now a wireless operator, signaller?
No, I failed, didn't I?
Not yet. You didn't?
I failed.
Oh, no, really?
No, I did.
Not on purpose, I hope.
Well, I didn't have any intention of passing.
No, exactly.
Let's face it, if you're out with a group, say you're on a patrol and you've got a radio operator with you, I mean, who are they going to hit?
He's a target, isn't he? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're always there in some form of danger.
One of those radio sets that they had at the time, they're different now, but those big sets, you should bump one of them on your back as well.
God, the weight of that, they're a little bit better now, with the batteries are lighter, I think, but that's only recent. They've been pretty heavy for a long time. So you're back in a fighting section.
Yeah. The commander's a fighting section.
Of course. What weapons were you carrying?
Well, we had a Thompson submachine gun.
Yeah.
War rifle. And we had no...
Yeah.
People would say to about from Saint-Aubin right through to the end of the war, we had very little transport. It was all chances. One time we was on the march, and we marched through the day, through the night, right the way through the next day. And every now and again you'd stop, people would fall over sleeping.
Really? Yeah, sleeping on the march.
And the only transport, real transport, was the jeeps with the stretchers on the top.
Yeah, sure. So you had several small operations then along that sort of, along the rivers there, on the Maas.
On the Maas, yeah.
Any of those sort of particularly sort of stand out?
Not really, not for me, no.
What about Operation Bograt? Do you remember that?
Sontagenbosch, you mean? There was a skirmish there right at the end of the war. I forget the officer's name, but they went over with a fire patrol.
Yeah.
And when they was over there, the war finished. But they had to get back. They didn't know, and neither did the Germans know where they were fighting.
Yeah.
But they eventually got back to the white. Bit of a mess and tumble, but they were.
Was that Pat Wall, the major?
Probably.
So once that was clear, you then got moved east to Germany.
We went to Minden.
Oh, Minden, yeah, okay.
We went to Minden. We took over an army cavalry barracks. And we had it all worked out. We got it going. And we employed the Germans to come in. They made a nice sloping floor for a theatre for us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We had a laundry. Yeah. We had a barber's. A whole lot. It was all lovely. But it all shut. They done that morning. When we finished it, they threw us out and put another lot in. And we went up in the mountain, looking after the Germans. Being caught up with the displaced persons.
Yes, the displaced persons, yeah. Yeah, you ended up protecting the population against them, really, I think.
They were attacking the Germans and raping the women and farmers.
Right. Yeah.
We finished up there. And then I got sent back when the war finished. Got sent back, and I landed at a place 20 minutes walk, no, half hour walk from my house. We've been here in London, and we're supposed to be in a building battalion.
Right.
I didn't know what a building battalion built. What are they doing? All the repairs, bomb damage repairs. It's the only time I've had an officer apologise to me.
Really? Why?
He came out one morning, I got sent out. It was at a place called Charlton. I don't know whether you know London at all. We moved up into Charlton. There was this big block of flats and apartments there. And they were in a bad state. And their lads were knocking up the stuff and doing brickwork and that. And the officer said to me, "I'm sorry, Mr. Donovan, but we haven't got any painting decorating to do. Would you mind going on a cement mixer?" And I thought, thank goodness you didn't want me to do painting decorating. And it's that cement mixing.
Yeah.
Lucky time for life, then.
Amazing. And was that the whole commando unit was doing that, or were you split up, or
and it was all split up.
Right.
That's what I say. And there was nothing really. That's what really upset me afterwards when I came more into it. the commando took a belting. They were made for one thing and one thing only. We did our job. And
yeah.
Just one side, like, you know, you don't hear a lot about them.
No.
Only when it comes to the end of the war. And now I'm the only man left.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
The only one left.
Well, that's why I'm glad that you're able to meet people. I mean, you met a load of Royal Marines recently, weren't a couple of my friends. That's how I saw that you were there.
It was through one, the colonel, he was a 47 commander, and we met him, must have been 2019, yes, the last time before COVID. And
right.
He was at Poulton Besson with them, and they were doing, they had the band, and they were, you know, doing a concert. And we took that because he liked the military band. And he said to us, you know, you like the military band. And he said to Dad, you never been to see the Royal Marine Band at the Royal Albert Hall? And Dad said, no. So I said, I'll get you tickets. And so he got us tickets through the Royal Marine Commando Association. And they got us tickets in the Queen's box at the Royal Albert Hall.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful.
And there was another, you sat next to, and he had a boy who wrote to you, Dad, didn't he? He had a son, a young son who was at boarding school, and he actually wrote to Dad and said, it was so nice to meet him.
Yeah, that's nice,
Through the actual going to the ceremonies, we've met two Royal Marine commandos, didn't we? And one, because when they realised Dad didn't have a berry, he gave Dad his berry.
Oh, yeah. He came up to me. I've looked after that berry.
Yeah.
It was mine.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
They're not giving to you. He said, never mind, you have it, he said.
Really, that's lovely, yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen him once since.
Yeah, he came the following year, didn't he?
Came the following year.
Yeah.
Well, I do know one.
Go on. No, go.
We were in Rouen, and the Germans had moved all the champagnes and liqueurs and everything else in the church there.
Right.
We were in Rouen. And then our officers found it and they said, that's got to go. You can't have that. And we never saw it. The officers saw it.
Of course they did.
One of our officers was made mayor of it. Mayor of
it. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wasn't ours.
Yeah.
Wasn't theirs.
I'm sure he celebrated that. But Dennis, honestly, mate, that was fantastic. I really, really thanks very much.
Well, thank you,
Bruce.
That's all right. Glad to have spoken to you.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, have a nice day.
And to you, won't you?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.